This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Former Philadelphia Public School Superintendent Arlene Ackerman is not going quietly after she negotiated a $905,000 buyout that was announced on Monday. She complained about her treatment in an article in Education Week and then upped the ante in an interview yesterday morning on WURD. She blasted Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, the district CFO Michael Mash, and the president of the PFT, Jerry Jordan. She complained about the political environment and the larger media in the city. She urged parents to leave failing schools using vouchers, and she intimated that racism and sexism was a factor in her departure. Well, today on Radio Times, what, if anything, does the messy end of Ackerman's tenure tell us about politics, race, and education in the city of Philadelphia? And I'm joined by three guests. Bill Anderson is the host of Wake Up with Bill on WURD, and Arlene Ackerman was a guest on his show yesterday. It airs from 7 to 10 a.m., and Bill, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you here. Carol Fixman, Executive Director of the Philadelphia Education Fund that works on issues of school reform, teacher quality, college access, and community engagement in support of public education. And Carol Fixman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. And Elmer Smith, rounding things out, columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, a member of the Daily News editorial board. And Elmer, always a pleasure. Nice to have you back with us.
Indeed,
on
a pleasure,
Radio
Marty.
Times. And Elmer, let me quote you. You wrote in today's Philadelphia Daily News, whatever else you can say about Arlene Ackerman's $905,000 buyout, you can't call it hush money. Why do you think she is being so vocal and so verbal about her tenure here in Philadelphia?
Well, she is a superintendent scorned, let me put it that way. I mean, and so much of what we hear from her is about her own personal pain, and I'm afraid that's one of the problems I have with much of what she is saying, that it is so personal, it has so much to do with her own hurt, to some extent she's sort of characterizing as issues for the system and for the children, that it's hard for me to sort out exactly what all of her motivations are in this. But she's leaving here. It's a real scorched earth policy. It's sort of like Grant left Richmond. I mean, I'm...
Well, and here we are talking about it. Bill, she was on your show yesterday. She's been on numerous times during tenure here in Philadelphia. What did she say yesterday that most maybe surprised you?
I was surprised how far she went. And, you know, in reading Elmer's column, I felt the same way. Clearly, there was no hush money here. There was no agreement not to speak. I was surprised that she was willing to specifically point fingers at the mayor, not even implying, saying that he essentially said to her to kind of fudge the budget issue to try and get additional money from city council and from the state. I was surprised at how far she went in essentially washing her hands of responsibility over the budget issues and kind of passing that on to Michael Mash. And I was surprised to kind of talk about the backdoor dealing that went on with the Martin Luther, or allegedly went on with the Martin Luther King School. I expected her to speak, but in kind of a history in Philadelphia, you would expect that you would get very vague, open answers. As you well know, you prepare to have to probe, and we really didn't have to. You put a mic there, and she was ready to talk.
What did you take away from it, Carol?
From the interview?
Yeah, from the interview. Or even the last, let's say, even week, because last week she had looked like or sounded like a kind of a pep rally and talked about, you know, is it a crime to do the things that she's been trying to do for Philadelphia school children? What's your takeaway?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of takeaways, Marty. First of all, I think that this can't just be about the superintendent. I don't think we should be making a personality cult out of one person. A superintendent is a terribly important person in a school district, any school district, especially ours, with 160,000 children who are supposed to start school on September the 6th. And I think that's where our focus needs to be right now, is how are we going to have school open with a teacher in every classroom, and how are we going to move forward so we can pull our community together? And I really think that's where our focus needs to be. Who are we going to select for the next superintendent? Right. What's the role of the superintendent going to be? What's the public will? What's our will? What do we want out of our school system? And what role does the superintendent play in this whole system of SRC, mayor, governor, and so on?
But isn't this part of it?
Go ahead, Bill.
Isn't this part of it? And I was surprised she went so far, but I think in order to move on, some of the things that she said, and this is why I think Elmer's article was so powerful, some of the things that she said demand answers.
Right.
You know, if in fact those backdoor deals are being made, it implies or flat out says that children are not ultimately what are driving the decisions in public education. And so to move on, if that's true, I think we need more answers so we can figure out how to progress.
Well, Elmer, let me turn back to you. And I think there are questions that many people have, and I'm not looking for you for the answers, which is, you know, why was she essentially shown the door? What was the problem? And the SRC had essentially sort of renegotiated a contract with her, and then a couple of months later, she's out the door.
Well, I think the answer to that question goes to the point that Carol is making, also that Bill is making. I mean, I think going forward, we need answers to those questions. I mean, one of the things that's happening in the school district and is happening in major school districts around the country is that they are in play. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can put it any way you want to, but our kids are in play. There are educational organizations that are vying to make money off of our kids. She has described an atmosphere that is possibly poison, and that the children get to be a secondary consideration in who gets what contract and that sort of thing. So in my estimation, if she's willing to open that door or to just cast that much dirt, then she needs to come forward and be a little bit more specific. If she's going to be standing around this town, as she says she is, and talking about educational issues, this is a huge educational issue.
And just to quote something said on your show, Bill, where she said that she was asked to do things that were totally unconscionable. And, of course, you know, what were those things?
Exactly.
I think she touches on it. I don't think she went. That's one of the areas she really didn't go that deep. Mm-hmm. But the statement, you asked, why was she shown the door? Mm-hmm. She was shown the door because of politics. I know that people don't necessarily, you can point out a lot of different questions you had about her time here. But the reality is all of those things were in place before they decided to renegotiate and extend her contract. And I think that that's what's mostly troubling here. If you had a problem with her guiding the schools and education and what have you, then you should have had that problem several months ago before you agreed to extend her contract. And that's kind of the shown the door because you wouldn't give in to political will. That's what gives it so much strength and makes her assertion believable.
Well, let me play actually a clip from your interview yesterday on WURD. And this is Dr. Arlene Ackerman, and where she talks about that she feels that she was subjected to a double standard or a different standard because she was a woman. Let's listen.
I wasn't born yesterday, and my experiences tell me that there are two sets of rules. There are rules for women, and there are rules for men. There are rules for black people, and there are rules for white people. And I am a double minority. So, I mean, to say that I'm emotional, I mean, is, to me, sexist and certainly insensitive.
Let me turn to you, Carol, and just, you know, Philadelphia, you know how the political system works. Yeah. Is she, I mean, this may be, is her own experience, but do you think there's some truth to what she said, which is that there are different rules for men and women, different rules for blacks and whites in the city?
Well, I mean, yeah, sometimes there are different rules for men and women. Sometimes there are different rules for blacks and whites. Whether that was the case here, I'm not prepared to mm-hmm. say. I think this is pretty complex. I don't think it's quite as simple as I was judged by a double standard. By the same token, I'm certainly there are different sets of rules. But let's be clear: this is a complex system. Running a school district is a complex system of governance, and there's just not one person that's in control. There are any number of individuals, and they're in a whole system of power, and this system has to work together.
Elmer, this is a tough town. I don't know if it's any tougher town than San Francisco or New York or Washington or Chicago or Miami or Dallas.
Yeah, I don't know that it is either. I think there are obviously different rules for as they relate to color, as they relate to gender, as they relate to age, as to any number of things. But I would point out that we had a black female superintendent in this school district who made it for 11 years, longer
exactly.
than anybody else has
exactly.
ever. Was a beloved figure when she came in, and was a beloved figure when
Connie
she
Clayton.
Went out. And
right.
Yes, Dr. Constance Clayton. And I'm sure there were double standards for her, as there was for this woman. I mean, it's unfair, but you negotiate it, you work your way through it, and I think that's the issue that she was a double minority when she came here. She knew what the deal was. And I'm not saying that it's fair,
mm-hmm.
but I'm saying that I don't believe in my estimation, that that is the root of her problems.
But can you know what the deal is until you experience Philadelphia? I think that many of us have been here for a while. I think that Philadelphia is a very small, big city. I mean, everybody is in your business. Politically, people know about the things that are going on. There are influences playing behind the scenes. And I don't know if this is the case, but what is possible is that Dr. Ackerman got here. You know, you had the Michelle Rhee kind of reform movement going on in the country. She got here and felt like maybe she would be empowered to do the same thing. The one criticism that you hear from you hear her say a lot and you hear from other people is that her get-along style, her management style was not good. You know, she didn't kiss the ring. She didn't interact. She was aggressive. Some people who even supported her said, I just didn't like the way she spoke to me. That ultimately doesn't fly in Philadelphia once you do it to the wrong person. And I think that what may have happened is, as aggressive as you were, as much as you had a reform agenda, you found out that in Philadelphia, you had to play ball. And that's part of what probably influenced this. It's certainly something that expedited it.
Well, Carol, let me go back to you and just underscore the fact that being a superintendent is a really tough job. And,
right.
and being superintendent in a city where 25% of the population is poor is making an even more complicated job. And it's also a city where there's a very interesting experiment, a test case of various forms of schools and approaches to education.
Right.
It's all taking place here in the city.
Exactly. Exactly. This is an amazing climate. In fact, what an opportunity to serve as superintendent in an environment like this. I always choose to see the positive side.
I can see that. And that's okay.
Love it. Glass half full.
That's okay. But it's a hard job because not only are you dealing with such an important issue,
right.
you've got sociological issues,
Absolutely.
Political issues,
Absolutely.
Economic issues, fiscal issues, and of course, you know, the state of Pennsylvania
exactly.
making dramatic cuts in education across the board.
Exactly. And actually, Marty, the poverty level is higher in the school district of Philadelphia than it is in the city across the board. And so I think it's something like 72% of the children in the school district of Philadelphia schools qualify for free and reduced price lunch. So all of the issues that come with being poor come into our schools. It's a huge challenge.
Elmer, she did say, and we probably don't have time to get into it deeply, essentially to frustrated parents, you know, use a voucher system. If you don't like the public school, then get out of it. Use the voucher system. How do you understand what she's saying there?
I understand. Unfortunately, part of what I understand her to be saying here comes out of her personal hurt. I think it's odd to me that she's had this epiphany. All of a sudden, this is a Paul on the road to Damascus moment. She's never been for vouchers before, but suddenly her contract ends and she's for vouchers. So what is it that occurred over the course of her tenure there that brought her to this mm-hmm. gradually? Or was it just because of what happened to her that she now sees this as a viable path for public schools?
Well, the her that we are talking about is Arlene Ackerman, Dr. Arlene Ackerman, and for 3 years she was superintendent of public schools here in Philadelphia. And after a rather, I would say, rocky summer, there were certainly rumors and speculations and allegations about whether she was staying or going. Decision made on Monday that she is going, although she hasn't gone. She did get a $905,000 buyout package, and we're talking about what all this means, if anything, with Bill Anderson, Carol Fixman, and Elmer Smith. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY and is committed to making lives better every day. Their cardiovascular center has developed a clinical affiliation with the Cleveland Clinic for cardiac surgery. Details at chestercountyhospital.org.
Sometimes your old plants are the best sources for new plants. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll walk you through the basics of propagating new plants from cuttings. Plus, how to water your lawn perfectly and answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
Go-go, a distinctive beat and musical genre rooted in the nation's capital, has fueled many a late night in clubs and dance halls around the country, but now one of go-go's founding fathers is celebrating a big birthday. Chuck Brown sits down to talk about his life, keeping the beat going as he turns 75, and his new collaboration with the National Symphony Orchestra. That's next time on Tell Me More.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
The Oriental Rug Room at 10,000 Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY, featuring hand-knotted rugs made by fairly paid adults. Online at rugs.10,000villages.com. 10,000 Villages. Quality you desire. Fairness artisans deserve.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. And while the Arlene Ackerman era at the School District of Philadelphia has come to an end, the reverberations and repercussions have continued through this week. There was a raucous School Reform Commission meeting on Wednesday. She was a guest yesterday on WURD, where she had harsh words for the mayor, the head of the PFT, and others. And we are talking about what all of this may mean with Bill Anderson, host of Wake Up with Bill on WURD. And she was a guest on his show yesterday, had been a guest during her tenure here in Philadelphia. Elmer Smith, columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, a member of the Daily News Editorial Board, and Carol Fixman, executive director of the Philadelphia Education Fund. And to our callers, we do have some telephone problems. We are working on them, and as soon as we get the lines up, we will be sure to open up the phones for your reaction to what we've been talking about and the events that have transpired this week. Let me go back to another clip, Bill, from your show, Wake Up with Bill. And this is, again, Dr. Arlene Ackerman talking about politics being part of the job, but also talking about her standing up for kids' education, especially African-American kids. Let's listen.
Politics are in this job, but I choose the politics that I'm going to engage in. And if it's around children, I'm going to always put children first. People hear me say that, but I think they think it's sort of just, they may have thought at the beginning that it was just something I was saying. It's something that I mean, I live by, and you can follow my career to see that I have taken tough stands for young people, especially children of color, who I believe don't get a fair shake at a quality education unless somebody stands up for them. It could be a parent, it could be, you know, another adult, but somebody has to stand up for them or they will be doomed to get an inferior education.
And that's Dr. Arlene Ackerman speaking yesterday on WURD's Wake Up with Bill. What do you think she was saying there?
Well, I mean, that's a comment that resonated with large numbers of our audience and certainly parents within the school district. I mean, it is, we're going to focus on the children who are most in need. And unfortunately, I don't think she necessarily cares about children any more than anybody else who has been there. But her focus with Promise Academies, with trying to put additional dollars and resources into the schools that are most in need, kind of spoke to that parental need or desire to have those schools compete with the magnet schools or some of the other places that get resources. So I think that was something that made people go, okay, you know, we really should rally around her and show that emotion because she's got, in quotes, our back.
Do you think race is a kind of a subtext here? As we talk about her tenure, we talk about schools, we talk about politics, how much do you think race is part of that mix?
You know, I often think to myself, when there is an issue in Philadelphia and you can't identify the source of it, think twice, is race perhaps part of it? It's a very alive issue in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. as it is in many other cities with such a diverse population, and I think we need to take it very seriously and deal with it straight on. But I also want to say that Arlene Ackerman not only in a very straightforward way invested in African-American kids, mm-hmm. she clearly invested in the lowest performing schools, and those served kids of all colors who were low-income kids who were not performing well. And I have to say that was a very important step on her part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would.
Elmer, go ahead.
I mean, I think race is an entirely valid issue in the, but not the same kind of issue that it is when it's normally raised in as a subtext in other issues. This is a school district that has a largely African-American population. African-American students in public schools, especially urban public schools, have been underserved historically, and so that's a constituency that has to be dealt with. It has to be dealt with in very specific ways. It's entirely proper. It's not. It doesn't speak to any kind mm-hmm. of favoritism. Anybody who is in charge of this school district needs to be about that, and so that's a perfectly legitimate issue. And and one that she raises, I think, legitimately. As far as the politics are concerned, one of the things that people forget about this job, whoever runs a school district like this needs to be a politician. Mm. I don't ever want to hear from another school superintendent come here and say, I'm not a politician, because our kids need a politician. They need somebody who can go to Harrisburg and stand up to those people and say, we need money. They need somebody who can go to city council and politically demand for them. That's one of the things that Constance Clayton was so good at. They need somebody who can also work behind the scenes politically, maneuver the levers, work the levers, find out where the constituencies are in the power circles to support those children. It's a political job, at least as much as it's an educator's job.
Let me play one more clip, and this is actually from the School Reform Commission meeting on Wednesday, and longtime Philadelphia community activist Novella Williams was one of the speakers, and here's what she said.
She deserved not to be lynched by three or four black men.
And she there, of course, is Dr. Arlene Ackerman. Elmer, let me go back to you, because we are talking about a black school superintendent, mm-hmm. a black mayor. The head of the SRC is African-American as well. When people say race is a subtext here, is racism?
In this instance?
Yeah, this woman's, and I'm just repeating what she said. She deserved not to be lynched by three or four black men. How do you interpret that, or can it be interpreted?
First of all, I don't think she was lynched. I think that they arrived at a point when the working relationship between the superintendent and the people who hired her was no longer tenable. I don't see that as a lynching. I think she on a scale of 1 to 10 as a superintendent, I think she was at least a 7. And so I thought she was good enough in terms of the way she handled her responsibility to continue to be here. But we've seen a lot of relationships end because of relationship issues that are not completely tied to. So I don't think she was lynched. And I don't see how this could be a racial issue. The idea then from Mrs. Williams, who I really respect from my mm-hmm. own neighborhood, mm-hmm. is I disagree with her on this. I don't see how you can characterize this as a racial issue when everybody in the room is of the same race.
Well, let me turn to you.
I mean, I think it is a racial issue. I don't think it's a racist issue, you know. And I think that the racial aspect of it is, you know, these clearly are African American children in most circumstances. When people push back against the Promise Academies, who will be underfunded, who are not going to have the same opportunities that some other children have, and so I think race is absolutely relevant to this discussion. Now, do I think she was run out because she mm-hmm. was an African American woman? No. Do I think that a lynching is appropriate terminology? No. It was inflammatory. It was emotional. People who get lynched don't get to go home, and they certainly don't get $1 million to do it. You know, so I think but that kind of plays on the emotion that exists right now, that parents feel like these African-American children didn't matter, and that's why they were able to get her out of here.
Let me quote something else, and this is actually from the Notebook from Benjamin Harold, who was covering this SRC meeting, and just a couple of quotes here from some of the parents who were there or people that were there. And I'm just quoting here, and my glasses are very fuzzy here, but I'm going to do the same. As speakers repeatedly use explosive language, one said scaling back Ackerman's Promise Academy was like turning hoses on little children. Others said the SRC, quote, stole Dr. Ackerman's job and that she was another black woman beat up and trashed. Still others accused the SRC of carrying the white man's water and favoring white racist supremacist unions over African-American contractors. And there's a lot of weeds there that we can't get into. But I wonder, Bill, even from perhaps even callers to your show, mm-hmm. whether this is how many people or some people in the city feel.
I think that race in the city of Philadelphia is always going to be a major issue. So you have people who come to the table with their preconceived notions, or people who are already angry, people who already feel oppressed, and you add sexism into that, which we know exists, whether or not it applied here. So I think some of that was, we are upset at children who we feel are being overlooked. But at the same time, you have a forum to kind of address many of the issues that people feel exist in Philadelphia politics, and specifically in underrepresented neighborhoods. So, and I think that's kind of the gray area we've gotten into as to how you move forward. And what Elmer said before, if we don't have all the information, then we're left in this position of exploring things like sexism and racism and, you know, imaginary or kind of behind the scenes deals. We need more information so we can get past it. But without it, you're kind of left to have this emotional discussion and guess what ultimately happened.
And Carol, this mm-hmm. this affects this. I mean, if people feel this way, and right. clearly they do, it affects right. what goes on in a particular school. Mm-hmm. It affects how people feel about education, how they feel about what their leaders are or aren't doing for them.
Exactly, exactly. That's a very serious issue. I mean, I think a number of the members of the community, especially those in the underserved community, were rightfully felt that their hopes had been crashed, because here there was going to be an investment in the schools that were underperforming. Their children went to those schools, and there is a budget mm-hmm. crisis, and the money was taken back. And so I think that's a natural reaction to be more than disappointed. But this isn't just about a decision that was made for Arlene Eckerman. We knew that there was going to be a budget crisis.
And these are the promise academies.
These were the promise academies. Right. We knew that there was going to be a budget crisis way before this. A year ago, we knew that about, I believe, $400 million of federal stimulus money was going to expire. We didn't know, of course, that the newly elected governor was going to cut the education budget so drastically. But we did know that a chunk of that money was going to go away.
Mm. Well, but what? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, Elmer, go ahead, and then Bill.
Promise Academies is a big issue, and I think people focus on that in part because that's what she was focused on. That's what she has brought to her constituency, and so that's the terms of the discussion. But the reality is that what has been lost here is more than Promise Academies. We're talking about the loss of basic educational program. That's something that stings across the board. And so Promise Academies gets to be a symbol for this, because it's her
exactly.
signature program.
Exactly.
The reality is that every kid in every school in this city is going to be hurt by these budget cuts mm-hmm. and the inability to find the money to really fund
exactly.
it.
And just to add to that, 1,500 teachers were laid off. Now, some are being sure. hired back, but yeah. nonetheless, the impact on the classroom is enormous. Bill, go ahead.
Well, and I also think, and again, kind of following up, because it was such an excellent article that Elmer wrote, when you're talking about Dr. Eckerman, if she's throwing out accusations, she needs to kind of finish the discussion and give out the information. The SRC needs to open their mouth. And the SRC now, Dr. Eckerman is talking. The mayor answered questions, but he's not really the person who's making the decisions. The SRC has said nothing. So if it's not race, if it's not sexism, if it's not personality, if it's not politics, then they need to stop acting like they are afraid to come out there and express the reasons why they needed new leadership. And that press release that they issued, I wish I could get somebody to write me that kind of recommendation when I was going for a job.
I think we all feel that way.
We love you. You're outstanding. You've got a long history of achievement, but you're fired. It didn't make any sense.
And that's Bill Anderson. He's the host of Wake Up with Bill on WURD. In fact, his show airs weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right before radio times. I should add, we do not overlap. And Arlene Eckerman was a guest many times on his show, apparently, about every month. And she was a guest on his show yesterday. And some of what she said has become big news here in the city of Philadelphia. Carol Fixman, executive director of the Philadelphia Education Fund, and that's an organization involved in school reform issues, teacher quality, college access, and community engagement in support of public education. And Elmer Smith, a columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News and a member of the Daily News Editorial Board. And again, my apologies to our callers. We continue to have telephone problems and our phones are not up, but we want you to listen. And you can go to our Facebook page, go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and I'm sure there's a conversation taking place there as well. Carol, picking up on what Bill just said about the mm-hmm. SRC, and this mm-hmm. has been around since this reform initiative came to the city, more than a decade ago?
2001, I believe.
2001. I mean, is it time to at least rethink its responsibilities for public education in
Philly? Possibly. And certainly there is a lot of conversation across the city about that. The issue of governance is critical. The issue of governance isn't everything, but it's certainly very important. We also have different players right now. So we have a different governor in place, we also have a different mayor in place, and the question is, where is the political will?
Right.
Is the governor going to step up and take responsibility for the school district of Philadelphia, which he on paper does have?
Because he can appoint members of the SRC?
He appoints three members, and the mayor appoints two, but the governor also appoints the chair of the SRC. So this is really critical. We also have to look to Harrisburg and look for some leadership there.
What do you think should happen, or what do you think the future of the SRC should be, Elmer?
I'd like to see the ultimately the control of the school district returned completely to the city. Frankly, there's never been a real state takeover. But what the state has done is increase funding. They've had three members out of five. But if you look at the history, going back to their last two leaders, the chairman has always voted with the Philadelphia contingent. If you look at every important initiative that's come through the SRC, the state does not have a plan. The state never had a plan. When the so-called takeover first came about, what the state's plan was to just turn the entire system over to the Edison Schools Company, a company that had never run a high school. They're going to give them 200,000 kids, and that was the state's plan. No state has ever successfully run a school district in the history of America. Mm. So certainly not this one.
But Elmer, let me just jump in for a second. I don't disagree with you, but I would look on to the administration of Ed Rendell. And between Ed Rendell and Donna Cooper, I think they had a very big say in what went on.
Oh, no question about it. And I absolutely agree with that. I thought Ed Rendell was a great education governor. He wasn't much of an education mayor, but he was a great education governor. But we were just talking about the SRC. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm saying is that the SRC has never really been in the control of the state. The when John Street...
Or the city, you mean.
Of the state.
The state. I see what you mean.
Okay. So the state appointed the chairman, but the chairman was appointed. The state named the chairman, but the chairman was appointed by the mayor. So that if you look at the real governance of the school district, this is not three people mm-hmm. who are really beholden to the state. It would be hard to be beholden to the state in terms of educational issues as a block. The most important block historically since the start of the SRC has been the city block.
I don't think that this governor cares, and I guess I'll continue to make enemies. I don't think this governor cares. I think that ultimately the governor was very clear that he is open to the concept of vouchers. There's a movement afoot to try and get vouchers,
including Hardy from Philadelphia,
Senator Williams. There's voucher legislation that's trying to make its way through Harrisburg. I don't think it's completely outside the scope of reality that the state is sitting back and watching Philadelphia sink and you generate additional support. Senator Williams told me on the show that ultimately he has gotten calls from people who before weren't even listening to the voucher discussion, who now are saying maybe we should take a long look at this legislation. I think that the governor would be fine. I don't think he necessarily wants to sacrifice children, mm-hmm. but I think the governor would be fine if the outcome of all of this is people are so disgusted that they just go ahead with the voucher movement.
And just underscore, Arlene Ackerman told parents yesterday on your show, Bill, think about vouchers.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, I hope that Dr. Ackerman has not gotten to the point where she really believes that. I kind of felt like, as Elmer said earlier, that was superintendent scorned. It was, you've treated me so poorly that I don't think this system can ever be returned to deliver quality education. So ultimately, let's just throw our hands up and go down the voucher path. I don't think she believes that. I hope she doesn't believe that. And if she did, it kind of calls into question whether or not you believed in the education system that you were heading.
Well, absolutely. But, Carol, about mm-hmm. a minute before our second break here. Sure. But it should be said that test scores, and that's how you evaluate mm-hmm. a superintendent, mm-hmm. they went up over Arlene Ackerman, did they not?
They did. They've been going up for 9 years. So 9 years, including the 3 years of Arlene Ackerman's superintendency, and we need to recognize that, certainly. Graduation rates have also gone up.
Slowly, though. I mean,
very
slowly. Would it be fair to say it's a couple points here, a couple points there?
Yeah, it's not huge, but the trajectory is in the right direction, certainly, and the mayor has certainly placed a lot of his political capital on those two issues, on test scores going up mm-hmm. and on graduation rates increasing.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Carol Fixman. She's the executive director of the Philadelphia Education Fund, joining us along with Elmer Smith, columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, a member of the Daily News editorial board, and Bill Anderson with us as well, host of a show on WURD-AM called Wake Up with Bill. And we are talking about the Arlene Ackerman era here in Philadelphia as the superintendent of the school district of Philadelphia. She left, but she has not... been quiet about her exit. We're going to take a very short break and talk about the future of the school district and what needs to happen next. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Marcellus shale boom is a confusing topic, from fracking to methane migration. State Impact Pennsylvania, a joint project from WHYY and NPR, wants to answer your burning questions about drilling for natural gas. Email your questions to pennsylvania@stateimpact.org with the subject line, Burning Questions. From the mundane to the technical, we'll answer the questions and post them on the State Impact Pennsylvania website. Visit newsworks.org for more.
So darling, darling, stand.
Lyricist Jerry Lieber, who co-wrote this song, died Monday at the age of 78. On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to an interview with Lieber and his songwriting partner, Mike Stoller. Also, we hear from Greg Mottola, the director of Superbad, Adventureland, and Paul, which just came out on DVD. Join us.
This afternoon at 3, and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The tiny Arab nation of Qatar is home to Al Jazeera and many anti-Qaddafi groups. What makes the country tick? And how come its people aren't rising up too? Plus, the latest on Hurricane Irene. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Elmer Smith, Carol Fixman, and Bill Anderson about education, politics, and race in the city of Philadelphia. Enough for more than an hour's worth of conversation. And again, to our listeners, our apologies that our phone system is down, so we will not be able to get you in on this conversation. But we want you to listen and also go to WHYY.org/Radio Times. And I'm sure there's a conversation taking place on our Facebook page. Carol, let me go back to you. And you had mentioned Constance Clayton Elmer, but I'm thinking of David Hornbeck, Paul Vallis, and of course now we're talking about Arlene Ackerman. And it seems even the last three, I'll put Connie in a box all by herself, but Hornbeck, Vallis, and Ackerman, I mean, there were controversies, there were problems back and forth. Again, underscoring the fact that it's hard to be a school superintendent, but is there something you think Philadelphia can do to make it an easier job for the next superintendent, that is?
Right, Marty. How could there not be controversies? How could there not be problems? Right. Otherwise, we would call it summer camp.
Yes, we would.
This is a very hard job, and I think that going forward, we should be careful that we don't expect a Superman. And I'm obviously playing on the movie, but there isn't a Superman. I'm sorry, and we shouldn't expect any superintendent coming in to be a knight in shining armor who's going to come in, throw everything away that's been in place, and decide that his or her ideas and programs are going to be the end-all to be-all. I don't think that's realistic, and I don't think that's smart. I think what is smart is to bring someone in who is solid, who can build, who can spend a little time identifying past strengths and build on those strengths. Don't start over. And hire a really strong team and delegate to that team.
I think a team rather than this, you know, a person?
Not a superstar. I want a star. I want a really smart person and a capable person. Please don't misunderstand me. Right. But I'm not looking for a superstar to do it all by herself or all by himself. I don't think that's realistic. It doesn't serve our children.
Well, and just picking up what you said, because it does appear, and one can understand a new superintendent comes in and they have grand ideas.
Right.
And then you feel as if public education just gets reinvented all the time.
Exactly.
Or that it just has a different name and it's the same old, same old.
That's right. It's really important to be able to identify what those strengths are and build on them.
Well, but it gets reinvented because we, and you know, we politicians, we, that kind of proverbial powers that be, don't allow people to get through their initiative. We don't allow them to implement plan.
That's
we have
true.
A new 10-year plan every 3 years. Right. Mm-hmm. And if it's a situation where you put your plan in, but we don't know ultimately if Dr. Ackerman's agenda would have worked. But if you bring somebody in, then I think that politicians, I think the community, I think that educators all have to be on board and say, we're going to let this person complete their plan. We signed off on it. We agree with it. Maybe we'll put some people there to support them. Mm-hmm. You know, but we've got to see it through. And if you keep trying to reinvent the wheel every couple of years, you're never going to get anywhere.
What do you think, Elmer?
I think this problem is very much resource driven. There's no getting around it. I mean, everybody agreed with the Promise Academies as an approach. But the question is, how do you fund it? Mm-hmm. Everybody who has come in with their sort of signature program, but there's really nothing new under the sun when it comes to education. There was nothing new about the Promise Academies. What they called on is what has worked forever. If you reduce the number of people in a class expose the kids to longer periods of education, it will produce results. It has always produced results. There's nothing new in education. Only in urban education do we have to We don't reinvent. We just rename. If you looked at the best schools in America, private schools, Exeter, Choate, there's no innovating going on there. What they are doing is what they've always done, and it's always been successful. We have to build a political constituency that will force the powers that be that have the money to invest in what we know works. We know what works in education.
But the money becomes the problem. And I think that's right. Kind of going back to Dr. Ackerman, what she was saying, if we can agree on what works in education, what we can agree on is who should get the millions of dollars to have the contracts to make it work. And I think somewhere we've got to figure out a way to get that money out of the decision making. Because if what happened at Martin Luther King School is the way Dr. Ackerman tells it, then ultimately the decision was about money, contracts, and making people rich, and not about who's going to provide the best job in terms of education. There's a $3.2 billion budget, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of contracts, and that seems to be what drives many of the politicians, not making sure young people are educated.
And this was something that came up and is complicated, having to do with who was going to run this particular school and who was sitting at the table and
right.
All of
private,
that.
Two private management companies. Right. One had the contract for a while. One was new, but the parents favored them.
Right.
And Dr. Ackerman went with the newer, more in quotes, favored company. And that allegedly angered some politicians who were looking at the money.
Carol, let me go back to you. And both Bill and Elmer have said that we know what works in education. And as Elmer said, whether you call it a Promise Academy, you have to have good teachers. You have to have well-trained teachers, well-supported teachers, hopefully well-paid teachers. You need smaller classrooms. You need longer days. You need computers, you need tools. I mean, is that what we're, and if we're talking about urban education, you're talking about kids with more needs than the kids that go to Exeter or Choate. Is that what works? If we were to boil it all down?
You know, what you've quoted are the components for a recipe, but you haven't cited the recipe. So if you're going to bake a cake and you have all the components, unless you got a recipe for it, you're not going to have a very good cake. And so people have said to me before, so isn't there a model somewhere that works? Can't we just import it to Philadelphia? And to me, I think that disregards the very complex nature of education. And each community is different. Children are different. Families are different. And we really have to take that into account. So sure, we know a lot of things that work. They may work here, but they may not work there. And so we need to figure out what's the recipe that works for particular schools. And it may not be across the board the very same thing for all 280 schools in Philadelphia.
But just picking up on the Promise Academies and what Arlene Ackerman tried to do, did that make sense for Philadelphia as you looked at that, which was to focus on some of these low-performing schools and invest some money, time, and attention?
I think it definitely makes sense to focus on low-performing schools and to invest in them. And that was a very important thing to do. There are many ways to invest in low-performing schools. Some of the things that she introduced were very good things. One of the things I'd like to see is a really strong focus on teachers. In my mind, if reform is going to be sustainable, and that's really critical to me and to us in our organization, if reform is going to be sustainable, teachers have to carry it. They have to drive it. It can't happen to them. And so I think we need to place a little bit more focus on having teachers at the table and being part of that
discussion. I'd be curious what you say about that, Elmer.
I would agree. I think one of the problems with the last couple of reforms, and I'm talking about on the national level, is that they start by kicking teachers to the curb. Some of that is political, having to do with the power of unions as opposed to political parties who are opposed to unions. But the reality is that no successful reform can start by kicking teachers to the curb.
I agree.
Yeah, and I think that part of the problem, and I like the concept of the Promise Academies. Mm-hmm. I think it's a difficult concept to implement in Philadelphia because we have so many needs. I mean, there are very few schools that I think that we would rate as A. You know, so if a Promise Academy is F and the overwhelming majority is a C, we've got people who were expecting to overlook the needs of the Cs in order to fund the Fs. That would be an easier sell if there were a lot of A's and you were saying, well, sacrifice a little bit because you're already excellent. But the problem is we don't have a lot of that in Philadelphia. So those kind of middle-of-the-road schools absolutely need additional resources as well. And kind of with a limited pot of resources, it's tough to direct a lot of it to just the Fs when the Cs are in need also.
Let me raise the issue of South Philadelphia High School. And actually, on your show, Bill, I heard Dr. Ackerman essentially say that that was her greatest regret. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, she seemed to blame her staff for sort of not knowing what was going on there. But nonetheless, largely Asian-American students were attacked. Some of them ended up in the hospital. It was an issue that had national resonance and raised a whole host of questions. There were concerns and actually a federal report that said that she really wasn't sensitive enough to the needs of some of these students. We just had Otis Hackney, the new principal of South Philadelphia High School, on the show, and a pretty impressive guy, mm-hmm. I have to say. But does that tap into some of the racial things that we've been talking about and some of the feelings among Asian Americans that this was a superintendent who favored African Americans over them?
Well, I mean, she regrets it, she said. I'm not sure that necessarily being uninformed as the superintendent is an excuse, but she says if she had to do over again, she would have responded quicker. She said that she really didn't have all the information of just how deep the conflict was. To that, I respond, you probably should have. Mm-hmm. But even if, you know, if in fact it's true that you didn't, then the fact that you are acknowledging I handled that poorly, I wish I had more information, I should have responded immediately, is at least a step in the right direction. But I do think that that could leave people feeling as if we're not as important to you as this kind of this, you know, large constituency, but a handful of individuals, our concern should be represented as well.
And let me turn back to you, Elmer, because when we talk about minorities, I mean, back in the day, it tended to be African-Americans, and now minorities includes Hispanics, Latinos, Asians, and many others as well. So when you talk about minorities in a city like Philadelphia, it's a more complicated issue.
It's a much more complicated issue. One of the things that occurred in the last 5 years is, and here's a paradox, an African student was beaten to death by an African-American student on the way in Southwest Philadelphia. And there was not nearly the furor over that that there has been over some of these other incidents. I looked at the South Philly situation. I thought this is regrettable. But one of the reasons it resonates is because it's an example that the larger community loves of black people being racist. I mean, that's if you really scratch the surface of what this is about. I think it was it's an awful situation. And can you imagine being someone who is new to a country, is struggling with the language, is trying to make it, and the system just turns its back on you. I mean, I think it's got to be a frightening situation for the people there. And the idea that she didn't know just doesn't get there for me. I mean, it got talked about over and over again for weeks before she finally responded.
Well, Elmer, let me just do a quick follow-up to you, because she seemed, and some of her supporters seemed, to blame the large media in this town. And by that, I'm assuming they're referring to the Philadelphia Inquirer and perhaps the Philadelphia Daily News.
Yes.
For its coverage of her and these various incidents that happened over her 3-year tenure. Do you think that her criticisms were fair?
I think they are apt. I mean, the person who is in charge of this system is maybe the second most important public official in the city of Philadelphia. They're going to get a lot of attention, and they're not always going to like it. I mean, David Hornbeck was a perfect example. And you talk about the race issue.
That's absolutely
right. One of the reasons that David Hornbeck was discredited, and he loved the children, mm-hmm. Was that he would go to Harrisburg and accuse them of racism on a regular basis.
And that's a quote, right?
Exactly.
That's right. He was, every time he went to Harrisburg, he was pointing out racists. And so while that may be true, that's not a very effective path for the children of Philadelphia.
But
go ahead, Bill.
It kind of goes back to what we were saying before. If you're not sharing the information, then people are left to make their own decisions. And that's part of the problem here. If race is not the key issue, if it's not sexism, if there are legitimate problems that were here, then the SRC needs to be on the radio tour. Tell them to come on Radio Times and explain to you the reasons why Dr. Ackerman couldn't lead. Explain to you what Dr. Nunnery is going to do differently that makes him the person to do it. But when people are sitting there and you're kind of letting this all pass without making comment, then people draw their own conclusions, and race will come out by people who feel that they have probably been oppressed, particularly in education in this city.
Carol, I'm looking at the clock a couple of minutes before we have to say goodbye here, but looking forward, and obviously we've got Dr. Nunnery, who's going to be taking over as interim superintendent.
Right.
School starts in what, less than 2 weeks?
Yep. 2 weeks.
A lot on the table. What can be done, do you think, in the next 2 weeks to repair some of the things we've been talking about, but also to focus once again again on the children that go to school here in Philadelphia.
You mean their children?
Yeah, exactly. Let's come back to the children, but go ahead. Right. Go ahead, Carol.
Right. I think there's a lot we can do. We can, first of all, really pay attention to the issues, the immediate issues at hand. How are we going to have a teacher in front of every class so that children don't have 60 colleagues or 60 other students in a classroom with them? That means working very closely with Jerry Jordan and the teachers' union. I think that's critical. Mm-hmm. And reaching out, shaking hands, sitting down, and figuring it out together. This is not just an issue of the interim superintendent. I think the SRC will have a role to play. I mm-hmm. agree. They have a key role to play. I think that accountability and transparency are key. And in these 2 weeks, there's maybe not anything immediate they can do, but they could help calm the waters. I think that we need to reset a tone of civility in the city around these issues of school. And I'd love to see all of our elected and appointed officials take that on. Our children will not start school on September the 6th in an embattled scene and do well. The adults have to come to terms with the fact that they need to be civil with one another and they need to set an example for our children. And if they're fighting each other up to the very first day of school, the school will not open successfully. Our children will fail.
And do you think, Bill, this has trickled down to the school kids, school students in Philadelphia, all the stuff that's been going on back and forth?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that they are aware of the fact that there's controversy. I'm not sure that the students are as aware of all the decision-making processes with a school CEO or superintendent. I hope, and I think it's unfortunate that Dr. Nunnery has been put in this position because he didn't do anything. Right. You know, and this is an individual who now is being criticized by the community, is now kind of being looked at, if you're the person who's being put there, you must be the yes man. So I think that's unfortunate. He's a good man. He was a finalist initially to be the school CEO. And I think that he can go out there and do some good things. But he's going to have to hit the ground running because he is going to be judged very closely, very quickly.
Final word from you, Elmer Smith.
I think Dr. Nunnery is a good man. I'm not so sure I'd like to see him continue to run this this district. He represents the status quo to some extent, and it's unfortunate. I'm not an enemy of his in any sense. I think the biggest issue going forward is the diversion of funds. We're at a place now where this district is grossly underfunded. But if you look at what's going on in Harrisburg, the plans will be to underfund it further. I think you need to kill SB1. SB1 is a bill,
is
the voucher bill. And the only thing that SB1 can do for the larger system is divert money away from it. If you were able to find spots for 60,000 kids through vouchers in this city, you'd still have 100,000 that needed to be educated in a depleted budget. We need to kill every diversionary tactic that wants to take a dollar out of this district.
Well, much more to talk about, and I appreciate all three of you joining us on Radio Times, especially at such late notice. And Bill Anderson, nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
Carol Fixman, nice to have you here. Carol Fixman as well.
Thanks very much.
And
glad
Elmer,
to be here.
A pleasure to have you as well, and Elmer as Smith as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this particular program. And again, I'm sure there's a fascinating Facebook conversation taking place. And again, my apologies to our callers. We were unable to get our phones up and running in this hour of Radio Times. Hope we will fix them over the weekend, and we'll be back on Monday. I'm Marty Moscowane.